Welcome to this edition of When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine, a discussion of sustainable living and what that means to you and me. I'm Jay Warmke.
And I'm Annie Warmke, coming to you.
Yeah, and from you. And today we're going to talk about sustainable forestry. Or where have all the ash trees gone? No, that's terrible. I won't even...
Where's your brain gone this morning? We're going to take
over. It could be
over.
A long day. Anyway, and we're joined by a guest today, Cassie Ridenour. Welcome, Cassie.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Okay, and Annie? I'm going to turn this over to you since
you
don't seem able to speak today.
Well, we're having a great day already because Jay's making it fun. So I am anxious to talk about sustainable forestry because it's not just forestry I'm interested in. I'm also interested in sustainable forest garden things, items, plans. And so I'm excited about the topic for today. But first, let's start out by talking a little bit about you and how you grew up and what you thought you were going to do when you were a little girl and how that's translated to today.
Well, I grew up in Akron, Ohio. So I did grow up in the city, but I think what's pertinent to today's discussion is that when I was about 2 years old, my grandfather bought some reclaimed forest land down in Monroe County, Ohio. And so from the time that I was potty trained, I was going down there with them and camping and playing in the woods and watching the woods grow. And so I think that has really informed a lot of things that I do today.
Well, that's pretty cool. So it's been in your memory forever then, huh?
Yeah.
That's very cool. Well, so tell me a little bit about what got you into not just the little girl stuff, but you actually are passionate about sustainable forestry and you're doing some things that are pretty cool. So tell me about that and how you actually got, like, as an adult involved.
So when I was in my late 20s, my grandfather started to think about selling that land. And I was alarmed. And I said, if you're going to sell it, you need to sell it to me. And ultimately, after months and months of negotiation and catching him in a weak moment and draining my 401k for a loan to write a check, I ended up buying the land. And, you know, he gave me advice to say, you know, there's a lot of value here and you need to learn about this. And there are people you need to talk to about this. And the more that people that I talked to and the more I learned about it, the more I got involved in sustainable forestry. So one thing that I do is I'm a member of the Tree Farm organization. And right now I'm the vice chair of Ohio Tree Farm Committee. But really, that's just a group of people who are committed to maintaining sustainable forestry. So, you know, you do this on an individual level. I guess my view is, I don't own that forest. I'm kind of the steward for that forest for right now. That forest really kind of owns me. And so I feel a big obligation to kind of, you know, make the right decisions for the land.
Well, when you're talking about sustainability within the forest and saying that there is a value to these forest lands, it just reminded me, my dad had a couple of 100 acres down in Meigs County, and they had this bright idea. They got a whole bunch of these pine tree saplings from the U.S. government, and they planted hundreds of thousands of trees. And the first year, I would say the deer ate about 100% of them. So it never struck me as very sustainable. I mean, after a summer's worth of work, and it seemed like they were planting species that were non-native. You know, you're bringing in, you know, these blue spruce or whatever, things that don't really grow naturally in the forests of this region. So I'm assuming that was the bad way of doing it. So what's the good way of doing it?
Well, now you're talking about afforestation, which is growing forest where there is none. And so, you know, one of the things I wanted to touch on was the history of forestry in Ohio, which is the whole state basically has been logged. You know, there's only a very few acres in Dysart's Woods. The last I heard, it's like a dozen acres of virgin forest in this whole state, which has 8 million acres of forest. So everything is new growth, relatively. But when they started to do afforestation, and the government was heavily involved in this. And I think this is an area, I've listened to your podcast, and I know that you don't often talk about government, but forestry is an area where the government has done a lot of work, has a lot of expertise, and has done a lot to restore the forest. So planting pines. So there, we have 80 of those acres that I have down in Monroe County are replanted in pines, white pines and red pines, mainly white. But they also put some red because whenever you have a forest, you know, you're susceptible to blights and things like that. So you want diversity, right?
Yeah.
So, but pines are something that puts their feet down pretty quick. They stop erosion. You know, that's always a big concern when you are trying to go from farmland to forest, or really for everybody, we ought to be concerned about erosion because it's just taking good soil and putting it in our creeks and rivers and into our water table. So probably what he did might have been the right thing. I've also tried some hobby Christmas tree growing. So if he was doing blue spruce, those were probably to be Christmas trees. That doesn't really work for me either. We usually go down and get a Christmas tree, but my success rate is, you know, in the single percentage points.
Well, let's talk about what exactly is sustainable forestry, because one of the things that I'm hearing in what you're talking about is how do we reforest the land and make money? And so I'm just wondering how that works if you're really talking about being sustainable in the forestry planning.
So, yeah. So one of the things that I did, because I kind of asked if I could come and talk to you guys because I saw what you do here, and sustainable forestry is something I have a passion for. Then I looked it up. And the definition is just what you thought it would be, which is to maintain a forest for the users that are there now and in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So now we need to talk about, well, who are the users now? Well, there's us, those of us that are walking around in the forest. Some of us, you know, maybe live in or near forests. People do recreation. There are people who ride horses through our forests and so forth. So there's a recreational purpose. There's also a lot of wildlife.
Yeah, so first we're talking human. Now we're talking critters, right?
Right. Then okay. There's critters.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that the forests do is a lot of global good. So the forests are really the Earth's lungs and our kidneys. So, you know, the trees are breathing in the bad air and breathing out the good. Through photosynthesis, they breathe in CO2, sequester it as wood, and breathe out oxygen. So forests are a big part of the solution, or at least the mitigation for the issues that we have with CO2 in our air. And then let's talk about the water, because, you know, one of the things that you know, I kind of try to understand what's going on environmentally in this state, you know, the state has spent over $1 billion in treating water for these algae blooms that we've had, particularly in the northern part of the state. Mm-hmm. But those algae blooms come from particularly farm runoff. I mean, rising temperatures contribute,
yeah.
But farm runoff causes warmer water and add a little bit of phosphorus from some agricultural runoff. And the next thing you know, you've got horrible algae blooms. Building forestry barriers around water tables can really help that, because the trees will just suck that up and the, you know, improve the health of the water table.
Well, the other thing you're talking about is that the forest itself, no matter what its condition, is its own ecosystem. And that's the value of what we're talking about. And then how do we look at that and say, can we create a lifetime plan for that? Because that's where the sustainability piece comes in. It says, look, it isn't just about this tree in this on this piece of property. It's about how it influences everything. And that's exciting, because if we can think more about how that works, we actually might plant some more trees.
Well, since we've got Cassie here, I want to get some free advice for our forest because our forest, we have about 40 acres and most of it is forested. And I'm assuming much of at least the southeastern part of Ohio, the Appalachian Hill part of Ohio, is naturally forested, you know, before everybody comes in and hacks it all down. And
although
our
it was
property,
clear cut.
Yeah, our property was clear cut in the 70s, we assume. And the forest seems to come back in various stages, some of which are not very healthy. The sassafras has come back. It seemed like some locusts. But then all the brambles and the grapevines and
Japanese honeysuckle.
Yeah, and the tree of heaven things that come back, all these invasives. Eventually, you know, given enough time, if you leave it alone, it seems to kind of find, I mean, the oaks come and the maples and the ash trees until they're all killed off by the ash borers. And so when I go out there in our forest and start hacking down all of the grapevines and hacking down what I consider invasives, am I helping it or am I hurting it?
So I think that's where having a plan and identifying what your goals are for your forest becomes important. So in our forest, and I'll just give you an example, you mentioned Tree of Heaven. Mm-hmm. Those need to go. They are no value to wildlife. They're no value as wood. They shoot up in the canopy, and they just take over up there.
Most people and would call those stink trees, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because they stink.
They smell bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so then those shade out the trees that you want to encourage. And I'm assuming that you probably would like to have oak and maple and some of the, you know, beautiful mixed hardwoods that are come naturally to Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
Then you talk about grapevine. Well, grapevine takes a lot of energy out of your trees. So if your goal is to just get growth to your trees, you would want to get rid of all your grapevine. In our case, we've chosen, you know, where we have trees that are never going to be great timber trees or anything. You know, there's a lot of trees there that are, you know, beautiful to their mothers, but maybe not beautiful in the eyes of somebody that would ever purchase it or use it. We might leave at least a grapevine an acre because wildlife love grapevine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so we do have a plan, just to say, and it's been done by a professional forester. And I think one of the challenges that we often have as landowners, particularly of forests, is that, and this is just conversation I have repeatedly with people, is they own farmland and forest land, and they don't really know what to do with that forest land. They just know it's a source of firewood. And even without a plan for that, just cutting firewood can actually be devastating, I know, to trying to be sustainable in your forest practices, and also in creating products from those forest trees, so that you can, that are not related to cutting them down per se. Or also another issue is you want to glean or cull some of those trees because you want the other trees to do better. So how do you work with maybe a company that comes in, because they're only going to want those really great trees. So how do you do that? And so just to say, we got to take a break for 1 second and then we'll get back to that.
Okay. Well, you have been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, joined today by Cassie Ridenour. Reminding you once again, it is indeed the end of the world as we know it.
And thank God.
And it's the end of the world for those trees that you're about to cut down, right?
No, we're not cutting them down.
Okay,
yet.
We're going to glean. We're gleaning the trees.
We're going to glean the trees.
Okay, so you're going to talk about, I think you've been asking, how can you make some money out of your forest, or at least make this forest healthy?
Well, have a plan. So
be good
some
stewards.
Of that plan might be to glean some trees so the other trees do better. And
probably
also,
the best way we could do it is leave them alone and come back in 200 years. That would be probably...
The tree of heaven will be all over the place.
Yeah, the tree of heaven will be all over the place. That's one dilemma. But let me talk about the pines that we have, because... And I'll say that cutting a tree is difficult for me as well, because you can tell I care about everything that lives there and about the trees themselves. But our pines then, when they grew, they all grew right together, because when you go out and you do a planting like that, you plant 1,000 trees an acre or something, and they're very close together, and then some survive, and you end up with really thin pines that are close together, and that's where we were in 2003-2004. And we got a plan together, and we decided to thin those pines. And our pines now are 24 to 26 inches at diameter at breast height. So trees are typically measured where you would stand and look at it breast height, how big is the diameter. And those trees now are big. And they really grew and got a lot, the forest itself, much better habitat. I mean, the turkeys love that. The deer love that. You can get around on the forest floor. There's a lot of critters that live on the forest floor. So there are times when you need to probably to cut some trees to make it better for other trees. Then you also need to decide, well, do you want to participate in forest wood products? And I will remind you that as we have this increasing population, everybody's got to live somewhere. Wood products are one of your best choices if you're building. I mean, you guys have made the best possible choice. I've been to your place. You've reused and recycled, and that's great. We know that on a mass basis in this country right now, that's just not what's going on. But building from wood is really a great way to keep that carbon sequestered because it's still in that wood. And then you allow for further growth of other trees if you decide to do a harvest. So ultimately, we'll cut some of our pines for cabin logs for people to live, you know, in houses made of those pines.
Mm-hmm. My thought would be that there's plenty of houses. We should be going back to those houses and retrofitting and not. But I'm really not interested in having forest products per se that are made of the wood. So I'm looking at that forest and saying what non-forest products are there. So that's where I come back to the forest gardening piece, where the forest hold promise for protein for a world that needs to move away from consuming so much meat. So there's so many things that could be possible in those forests that have nothing to do with the wood per se as a product. And I'm interested in that. But
hold it before you move on. I mean, wood is one of the products, but what are some of the others? Let's identify those. I mean,
you said food. Recreation.
Well, recreation, yeah. So service type thing, but there's nuts. I mean, I guess.
Right, non-timber forest products.
Right.
So the most common in Ohio would be maple syrup, my personal favorite.
Hey, there you go.
That would be everybody's everything. It's like yum, yum, yum.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Morel mushrooms, another great favorite if you can find them, right?
Yeah.
You can grow
berries.
Mushrooms, berries.
Lots of berries.
Raspberries. And then herbs like ginseng grows wild in Ohio forests. So those are some of the products. Now,
Are you seeing people actually then taking their marginal forest land and turning that into a livelihood on any kind of scale, you know, harvesting pawpaw, harvesting ginseng, harvesting whatever?
I don't know anybody that's doing that. I know several people that are maple syrup producers. Mm-hmm. It for everybody, it's kind of a side thing. It's not something that
they're not making a living,
make a full living at. But
there are
they are
people
doing us all a public service when they make maple syrup.
So this is an untapped market.
Well, as I said, they're
doing maple syrup. But
I think the challenge is that people have that forest land, but they don't realize that they can do these things with it. They're not educated.
Right.
But there are people in different regions of this country who are actually doing forest gardening where they're looking at so we have a tree like an oak tree that can produce nuts, and then we have an elderberry bush. They're really, you know, not more than maybe 15 feet tall. Or we have, you know, some kinds of willows, which are an amazing kind of plant that have more than 80 uses. So you would be looking at different tiers in order to understand where would those non-wood foods and other things come from.
So really what we're looking at here today is sustainability from the standpoint of how do we keep and maintain our existing forests in a healthy way? And then sustainability from how can we begin to value forests as another resource for economic activity, which to this point has not really been a thing. You know, we've been more in the pioneer mode of chopping them down, planting corn, planting soy. That's how we make a living.
Growing beef.
So now we need to
beef.
Yeah, now we need to move towards, hey, forests are a thing in and of themselves. Let's start exploring how we can make a living from that.
We had an intern, a former intern that came for something this summer, and she was asking me about my hazelnut bushes, which are quite tall. They're probably about 15 feet tall. And she was saying that she's interested in finding stands of things like hazelnuts or other forest plants that would produce protein, and then taking the biggest, best of those seeds and figuring out how you can really just keep making that genetic goodness go forward, because we have to move more in that direction. And she was like really keen about it. And I really hadn't thought that much about it. You know, I mean, I do eat those kinds of foods, those kinds of nuts and things like that, but I wasn't thinking about it as a way, as a culture, we should be moving in that direction so that we can say, hey, we've got all this forest land, which we do, but we're not utilizing it as a resource to this, to the people of this country, other than to cut down something and make a piece of furniture or a house from it.
Yeah, I think there is value in the nut production and that we have in our forests. I think the difficulty is with like these mature trees, nuts come and go. You know, some years you'll get nuts and some years you don't. So if you're trying to make a sustainable business, you know, it's going to be very cyclical. And then berries, you know, berries are great. For us, it's primarily raspberries, and blackberries, and you just better be out there for 2 or 3 weeks, you know, in the heat of the summer to pick them.
On the best day, you know, because otherwise they get scarfed up by the critters.
But there are lots of varieties of fruits that can grow in the forest, and I'm no expert on that. I'm just saying I know that I've looked at a lot of and studied a lot of information about forest gardening.
Well, you were just harvesting some persimmons. I mean, there's a nice...
persimmons, yes.
But in the wild, these trees naturally are scattered. You know, they're not in beautiful groves where you can come in with an industrial process and harvest. You're going to find one over here and one over there, and then the one that's doing the best is down over a hill that you can't get to. And
well, that's not true of all. Like, pawpaws grow in stands naturally.
Yeah.
So, and I think persimmons do as well, and they don't get to be, you know, huge. But again, I don't think we've learned enough about the process of how these things work and how they can complement each other, because trees are amazing how they help each other. I think that's what's fascinating about all this, and we're just really, I don't mean me just beginning to understand it, which I am, but that there are people really fascinated and interested and passionate about how we move from where we are as a culture, just raising trees for firewood or for furniture or housing, and moving more to seeing that forest land, which is so plentiful, creating revenue. And I don't say make a living, because if you're going to be in farming, you've got to make it from a lot of places.
That's right.
And then you make the living.
And then you'll go broke a whole bunch of different ways.
That's right. Well, what would you say, Cassie, is the one step that people could make if they do have forest land to move in the direction we're talking about?
I think the first thing to do, and sounds like you guys have already done it, is to get a management plan for your forest. So there are government monies available that will subsidize this if you don't want to pay to have this done. So you can start through your NRCS office. So what's that? National Resource
Conservation Service.
There's an office, I think, in every county. That's where you would start to get EQIP money. So there is a program. It's the Environmental Quality Incentives Program for Forestry. And they'll help you get a plan written. And one of the things that you just mentioned is you have these trees and you don't even really know what you have. And for me, after being on my forest land all my life, I got this plan. I brought it along. It's thick. They did measurements and surveys of 100 different points across our 240 acres. I found out about trees I never knew I had. I have butternuts, which are, they call it the white walnut.
Oh, yeah.
I never knew I had that.
Yeah, that's great.
So I want to get out there, like you're mentioning, and see, can I harvest these? Can we eat these? Can we cook with these? You know, other products that probably are worthwhile talking about. Walnuts. I recently saw walnut oil in a grocery store. So apparently there's more uses for walnuts just than the nuts.
Right. Well, the hulls are used for parasite control.
Yeah.
So they grind it up.
Mm-hmm. So the first thing would be to get a plan, and as part of doing that plan, they'll tell you what you have. And once you know what you have, then you can start to figure out what you can do with it. But I think before you understand what your own ecosystem really looks like, you're hard-pressed to figure out where do I go from here, because we sure don't want to end up cutting it all down and starting over, right? Sure, we've got to accentuate the positive in our forests.
Yeah. Well, I think most people understand that clear-cutting, which is one way that they did harvest forests for a long, long time, is probably one of the most destructive ways you can deal with the forest. So there's got to be a well-managed process. But one question that arose, and we were discussing this a little bit on the way here, is when you're using your forest for firewood, you know, we talk about how trees absorb the carbon dioxide. They turn that into carbon. But when a tree dies and begins to rot, it releases that carbon dioxide back into the environment. So I have this vision that if I cut down dead trees, you know, ones that are already dead, then I'm not causing a problem, because that thing, maybe I'm accelerating how quickly the carbon dioxide gets back into the atmosphere by burning it, but it's going to go there anyway if I just let that tree rot. Is that my own justification of something I'm going to
yeah,
do anyway?
I think it is.
Or is this logical in some way?
No, I think there's some logic in that. When you look at what you're going to use for energy, and I mean, we all need heat. It's got to come from somewhere. Firewood, particularly coming from dead trees, I think it's one of your most innocuous choices.
And there seem to be a lot of dead trees, because the ash trees are all dying. We had sassafrases just go crazy.
Here's the deal. So one thing that is in that mix, that equation of what you're talking about, is that that tree has a long period of time to slowly release the carbon, and you're accelerating that. But also, it's habitat for a lot of things that live in the forest, so it should be done with great care.
Yeah, although that backfired, because there was a tree that had a big hole, and there was a bee's, you know, honey. And I was going, that would make good firewood. No, I'm going to leave it. Next year, I came out, and the tree's lying down on the ground. The bees are all gone, so I should have evicted them earlier.
Well, I also want to say that like with butternut, that's a tree that really everybody ought to try to grow if they have a big piece of land, because you can just give us some of those butternut pods and we can stick them in the ground. They're like buckeyes. They're going to grow and be beautiful, really amazing, amazing trees. And that's the thing that we're doing that we're very interested in is getting people to propagate and grow trees. Simple things like you can just take the sticks from elderberry or some willows, and you can just put them in the ground at the end of February, and they're going to create a tree for you. And so we've got to get more trees going. We've got to be more passionate about this.
Okay, well, you've been listening to When the Biomass Hits the Wind Turbine with Jay and Annie Warmke, joined today by Cassie Ridenour, and we even let you speak a couple of times during this cast. We want to thank our award-winning producer, Adam Rich, and we want to thank you for spending just a little bit of time with us. And as your grandmother hopefully told you while sitting in the forest, the secret to a happy and sustainable life is...
Some days I'm not sure, but today it's to clean up your own mess, play nice with others, and grow some trees, Jay.
Till next time.
And her children will be healed. Come out, see the morning glory, blossom in the night. Know the skies are dancing in twilight. Soon we'll be together, all will be revealed. Mother Earth will sing, and her children.
You can find more information on living sustainably in our unsustainable world at BlueRockStation.com. Yeah!